The Idiot by Fyodor Dostoevsky. Part 2. 2 days after the strange conclusion to Nastasia Philipovna's birthday party, with the record of which we concluded the first part of this story, Prince Muishkin hurriedly left St. Petersburg for Moscow in order to see after some business connected with the receipt of his unexpected fortune. It was said that there were other reasons for his hurried departure, but as to this, and as to his movements in Moscow, and as to his prolonged absence from St. Petersburg, we are able to give very little information. The prince was away for 6 months, and even those who were most interested in his destiny were able to pick up very little news about him all that while. True, certain rumors did reach his friends, but these were both strange and rare, and each one contradicted the last. Of course, the Epanchin family was much interested in his movements, though he had not had time to bid them farewell before his departure. The general, however, had had an opportunity of seeing him once or twice since the eventful evening, and had spoken very seriously with him. But though he had seen the prince, as I say, he told his family nothing about the circumstance. In fact, for a month or so after his departure, it was considered not the thing to mention the prince's name in the Epanchin household. Only Mrs. Epanchin, at the commencement of this period, had announced that she had been cruelly mistaken in the prince, and a day or two after she had added, evidently alluding to him, but not mentioning his name, that it was an unalterable characteristic of hers to be mistaken in people. Then once more, 10 days later, after some passage of arms with one of her daughters, she had remarked sententiously, "We have had enough of mistakes. I shall be more careful in future." However, it was impossible to avoid remarking that there was some sense of oppression in the household, something unspoken but felt, something strained. All the members of the family wore frowning looks. The general was unusually busy. His family hardly ever saw him. As to the girls, nothing was said openly at all events, and probably very little in private. They were proud damsels, and were not always perfectly confidential even among themselves. But they understood each other thoroughly at the first word on all occasions, very often at the first glance, so that there was no need of much talking as a rule. One fact, at least, would have been perfectly plain to an outsider, had any such person been on the spot, and that was that the prince had made a very considerable impression upon the family, in spite of the fact that he had but once been inside the house, and then only for a short time. Of course, if analyzed, this impression might have proved to be nothing more than a feeling of curiosity, but be it what it might, there it undoubtedly was. Little by little, the rumors spread about town became lost in a maze of uncertainty. It was said that some foolish young prince, name unknown, had suddenly come into possession of a gigantic fortune, and had married a French ballet dancer. This was contradicted, and the rumor circulated that it was a young merchant who had come into the enormous fortune and married the great ballet dancer, and that at the wedding the drunken young fool had burned 70,000 rubles at a candle out of pure bravado. However, all these rumors soon died down, to which circumstance certain facts largely contributed. For instance, the whole of the Rogojin troupe had departed, with him at their head, for Moscow. This was exactly a week after a dreadful orgy at the Ekaterinhof Gardens, where Nastasia Philipovna had been present. It became known that after this orgy Nastasia Philipovna had entirely disappeared, and that she had since been traced to Moscow, so that the exodus of the Rogojin band was found consistent with this report. There were rumors current as to Gania, too, but circumstances soon contradicted these. He had fallen seriously ill, and his illness precluded his appearance in society, and even at business, for over a month. As soon as he had recovered, however, he threw up his situation in the public company under General Epanchin's direction, for some unknown reason, and the post was given to another. He never went near the Epanchin's house at all, and was exceedingly irritable and depressed. Varvara Ardelyanovna married Titsin this winter, and it was said that the fact of Gania's retirement from business was the ultimate cause of the marriage, since Gania was now not only unable to support his family, but even required help himself. We may mention that Gania was no longer mentioned in the Epanchin household any more than the prince was, but that a certain circumstance in connection with the fatal evening at Nastasia's house became known to the general, and in fact, to all the family the very next day. This fact was that Gania had come home that night, but had refused to go to bed. He had awaited the prince's return from Ekaterinhof with feverish impatience. On the latter's arrival, at 6 in the morning, Gania had gone to him in his room, bringing with him the singed packet of money, which he had insisted that the prince should return to Nastasia Philipovna without delay. It was said that when Gania entered the prince's room, He came with anything but friendly feelings, and in a condition of despair and misery, but that after a short conversation, he had stayed on for a couple of hours with him, sobbing continuously and bitterly the whole time. They had parted upon terms of cordial friendship. The Epanchins heard about this, as well as about the episode at Nastasia Filipovna's. It was strange.